Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This episode of Conversations Against Living Miserably is brought to you in collaboration with Calm, obviously, Dave, obviously, and Murdoch London Barbers.
Hello, Newcastle calling. 12 points to you for tuning in to another episode of Conversations Against Living Miserably. Oh, I proper miss you, Revision. I saw that they've got like a full contingency plan to ensure that they can go ahead no matter what, in whatever capacity next year, which to be honest is absolutely a nugget of information, slowly getting me through some days. I know a lot of bad things have happened in 2020, I mean a lot, but surely Iceland being robbed of their undoubted victory in Eurovision 2020 is the biggest travesty of them all. We need justice. Oh, as I'm talking there, I've got like a little ulcer on my lip. Well, not on my lip, like, you know, inside my lip. That's still my lip, isn't it? It's only inside my mouth. As I'm talking, like, I can feel it hitting off my teeth and it's really hurting me. But I'm soldiering on through the pain for you, because you mean that much to me. Thank you so much for joining us for another week. We've got another fantastic guest for you today. She's a multi-award winning stand-up, an incredible writer and director who's behind the sketch group Geen's Family Gift Shop, the host of global smash hit podcast All Killer No Filler, and undeniably one of the best dressed people in comedy. It's only bloody Kiri Pritchard-McLean. In today's episode, we'll be chatting about mental health in farmers, being a workaholic, and getting shit together at 30. Hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Conversations Against Living Miserably. Today we are joined by the wonderful Kiri Pritchard-McLean.
Hey guys.
McLean?
Yeah, McLean. Yeah. Die hard, not toothpaste. Yeah. The sassy line I give people when they're bringing me on as an MC.
I had the horrible moment there. I was like, have I been pronouncing your name wrong?
No,
the
don't whole worry time. About it. Also, I don't really know how to pronounce my, well, I say Kiri, but people say Kiri. Mm. And if it's a Maori name. Rose Matafeo says Kiri, like that. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'd never heard anyone pronouncing it probably before. Yeah. And then I realised, because it's like quite jarring, I was like, oh, this is how people feel when I'm like, Chris, instead of Reese. When I'm like really deliberately being like, Geraint, saying people's names. It's a great feeling. I have such name anxiety, if that's a thing. Like, just, I think because my name gets wrong all the time. I get Laura or I get Pattinson, that, and I know how it makes me feel, and I'm often too shy to call people out on it. Yeah. So I get so panicky about saying people's name wrong.
People I've known for ages, like Lolly Adefope, pal of mine, but in my head I'm like, don't get this wrong because you'll look a racist. So immediately I get her name wrong.
Yeah.
So like anything that's like not John Smith, I panic about, because I'm like, I'm going to look like a member of the EDL when I'm like, I'm just going to call you George because it's easy for me.
I think I didn't know how to pronounce your surname until you did the intro on the podcast. And I was like, oh, that's it.
Yeah. Oh. I did a talk on Saturday and I got introduced as Aaron Galilalees.
Galilalees.
Ooh. And it's the first time I've ever had Galilalees. And I was really happy and really annoyed that it wasn't my actual name.
Our first question that we ask everybody is, when was the last time you felt calm?
Ooh. Calm. Oh, my gosh. I guess that's not a feeling I think about having a lot. When was that? Do you know what? Actually, it was probably at Christmas. So I go back to Wales, where I'm from, at Christmas. My family has a farm in the middle of nowhere, so I go back there. And it's very quiet. It's very peaceful. If I'm there, I'm only ever with people I love. There's no mobile phone signal, so there's no work. So I'm not really... And the internet is terrible. So I think it would be at Christmas... watching A Muppet's Christmas Carol, although it's very stimulating, very calming for me, with my friends and family. But yeah, calm, weirdly, is not a feeling I really think about having. Because even things like that are meant to calm you down, I was talking about this recently, I find incredibly irritating.
Mm-hmm.
Like mindfulness apps, I'm like, you breathe out. Like, I just don't like being told what to do. And like yoga as well, I've just started doing like a yoga thing, Yoga with Adrian, I'm sure everyone's talking about it. I really like that her dog's there, but other than that, I'm like, yeah, all right, crack on. Like, I hate anything like ASMR. I find incredibly irritating.
Yeah.
I'm like, get a real job. It just finds out, I'm like, who has the time to do this stuff? It feels incredibly indulged, which is part of the problem, that anything that I consider being calm, I see as being indulgent. But yeah, I think it's when it's just, and no one can answer those emails, so there's no work I can do, really. I just have to lie on that sofa, mainlining Bucks Fizz.
Yeah. It does feel like calmness is such a luxury, doesn't it? The more I think about it, that seems to be people's general consensus, is like you were even saying before, like you feel guilty for doing things that make me feel calm. But calmness shouldn't be a luxury, isn't it?
No, it's just so difficult to find it.
Just like
nowadays.
Tampons, essential item.
Yes, not a luxury. Our calmness tax.
Yeah.
I guess that's being employed. But then being unemployed is like incredibly stressful. Because I was thinking about, you should be calm for at least like once a day. But even, especially with phones as well. When I'm lying in bed, that bit before bed, I'm on my phone, stimulated, looking at stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It should be a daily occurrence. But it's such a rare thing.
When was the first time you became aware of mental health being a thing, be it positive or negative?
Let me think. I guess I would have been acutely aware of it growing up, because I think the men in our family really struggle with their mental health. And there was like euphemistic talk of people being like plagued by the black dog. And I was like, oh, you mean when daddy's sad and shouts? You know, like, and like, I definitely got the thin end of the wedge. I want to be really clear with that. My brothers had it, because my parents had such huge money troubles when my brothers were growing up. There's a big age gap. So by the time I came along, they were far more comfortable. And I had a comfortable, I would say, middle class upbringing. My brothers didn't. But like the stories that my brothers tell about how my dad was when he was clearly very sick. He got laid off, and like he's one of those very alpha masculine, I'm the breadwinner guys. And then he's suddenly in this farm in the middle of nowhere, Wales, with three kids and no job and no prospects. So they, the way it was sort of talked about in shrouded terms, and then definitely with my brothers as well, that one of my other brothers was sort of quite changeable.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm just trying to think about how comfortable he would be me talking about this.
We can edit it afterwards if you say anything that you're not happy with.
Yeah, I think I've just been aware definitely of men's mental health in my life, and like an uncle that they were like, oh, you never know which one's going to turn up. And that was just like someone who's undiagnosed, unmedicated, not receiving any help, but just like, well, that's just what he's like. And especially the men in my family, the Welsh side, it's almost like you can physically see a thundercloud hanging over their head. It's in their face changes colour. Like their complexion looks different. And so I was aware of it, but I wouldn't have been articulate enough to know that that was mental health. I just knew it was this thing. But it's ethereal, isn't it? It's not, because, you know, as everyone says, like if you've got a broken leg, you can see it. But with mental health, it's just, although you can see it in like their pallor, you know, you just don't know what it is. It's kind of intangible.
Do you think there's a difference as well, growing up and more like a countryside environment and how people might tackle mental health and deal with mental health there compared to like a metropolitan city.
Yeah, I mean, I can only speak of my experience.
Yeah, yeah.
So I grew up in Wales on a farm, and we got out just after BSc and just before Foot and Mouth. The highest rate of suicides for a profession is in Welsh farmers.
Really?
So suicide was a fairly common backdrop to our upbringing of, like, men going missing, just stopping existing. And it's such a tough thing to talk about. And they've started to introduce some great things where they, you know, they get farmers along to do practical stuff under the pretense of actually just talking to them about their feelings. Because they're very, very masculine. It's often quite lonely work, very back-breaking work as well. So you will physically see yourself getting slower, which means you will make less money on very tight margins. Also, loads of people I know are farmers. That's all they ever wanted to do. And then suddenly that stops being viable. What do you do then? The one thing you've been bred for, brought up for and trained in is become obsolete. Mm. And also they're expected to be business managers, which these people aren't. A lot of them aren't brilliant readers or writers because they weren't at school. They were, you know, helping out with the hay making or lambing or whatever. So it's just this group of very invisible people that were hit very badly by, you know, a couple of really unfortunate things. And then globalization as well. Another casualty, as well as, like, you know, you're from an industrial, like, northeast town. But, like, farming as well was sort of, I know they get lots of subsidies, which is like, oh, I'm not getting into that. But, you know, there was definitely lots of people who were left behind. You have to have a big, huge, almost factory farm to make it pay. So, yeah, I was definitely aware of how that wasn't spoken about in hushed terms. And never in terms of mental health, and probably in terms of it being sad but selfish as well. Like that would have been my abiding memory of, like, well, what's his wife gonna do now, kind of thing, as opposed to, like, oh, that someone can get to that point. I talk about this obviously at the time of recording, everyone is talking about people taking their own lives at the moment because it feels especially poignant. But I'm very bad with grief anyway and intrusive thoughts when it comes to death. And then this, the fact that's being talked about, especially at the moment, I always think about is anyone who possibly tries to make the argument about suicide being a selfish act is when you watch, like, those war films that also those people are so keen on, what people will go through to survive, what people live through in concentration camps to survive, and how hard people will work. Imagine being so consumed that the opposite of that feeling is happening in you. Like, it's utterly incomprehensible unless you have experienced it. And I've had thoughts, definitely, like, darker thoughts where I'm like, well, like, it would just be easier if I wasn't here. But I haven't then gone, and I'm going to work out how to do it. Whereas I have friends close to me who have been like, I've got to come round because I've worked out that those curtain poles can take my weight and that kind of thing. How we can have anything other than overwhelming empathy towards that situation, I just wouldn't know. Yeah.
I think it was LNER the other day, because you'll have this a lot of travelling on trains for work. I've regularly been on trains that have been affected by somebody jumping. Yeah. And you'll see people, the way they react, like, oh, well, that was such a selfish thing to do because I'm actually going to London to see a show. And it's like, well, how amazing that you are so content in your life and have things to look forward to, but this person didn't have that. And I actually saw LNER tweet the other day, we're really sorry if we've inconvenienced your journey, but somebody tonight, their family member isn't coming home. And I thought it was so brilliant for them to kind of just almost be like, have a bit of fucking compassion. I'm so sorry that your plans have been, like, delayed, but somebody has a family member who isn't coming home tonight.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes people need just a bit of a stark reminder. Did you know what LNER are now? If your train's delayed, you can give the money to Com.
I did not know that.
That's the thing.
Really?
You know how you can get, like, delay repay and you can get it sent to you? There's now an option to donate that money to Com.
Oh,
which
great.
I think is fantastic.
Yeah.
That's good.
Really good.
Yeah, that's such a good way of putting it as well. Because I've had, like, arguments with people on trains who've been like, tutting, and I'm like, what did you just do then? Because I'm like, think this through. And even if you're having that reflexive moment where you're like, this, I've been trying to get home for 2 weeks and this is the first time I'm going to see my partner, and be like, and you're going to get to see that human.
And maybe hold them a little bit tighter when you do get there. You get to see them.
Absolutely.
Definitely. I see it a lot as well, the it's selfish argument. I don't think it is, because to me, being selfish is putting yourself and your feelings above everybody else. Whereas when you're in that position, you care about yourself that little, you want to remove yourself. Like, it's not to...
People think they're doing the best thing for their family and friends. That's the rationale, is like that they apply what we understand is skewed logic. But like the logic of, I am so worthless and so shit and such a burden.
Yeah, that this is the best
thing
to do.
This is the best thing for everyone I love. Mm-hmm. They think they're doing, it's the ultimate selfless act.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's so, so awful. So awful. Not exactly a hot take, that. Kiri says suicide's awful. Cool, babes. Yeah. Cool. Thank God someone finally said it.
When did you become aware of kind of your own mental health and looking after that?
Well, I think when I was first in uni, so I went to a university first to do psychology, where all the maddest people go. I know that's not very inclusive language, but I'm talking about myself. And then I went and did drama. But that first year, I did that thing where I went to university from a small town, big fish, small pond, went to Liverpool and was like, did that thing of like, I know what uni's about, and then didn't find anyone I really got on with.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then was like, I'm the only person in the world not having fun. And I just wanted to be at home all the time. And then you feel like a failure. And then your friends from home are like, oh, I've got to go. I'm out going to, like, they're clicking with all their mates in halls. And I was just like, that feeling of like being overwhelmed, outcast, all that stuff that I really recognize now. And then you're like, yeah, that now is like being very unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
And just things of like, I remember there being like a day where I was like, all I've got to do is go and pay this check-in at the, which really ages this, check-in at the bank. And it was like, so I know the bank shuts at 4, so I need to leave here at like 3:30 and being in bed. And it just, that one thing you have to do, sliding past.
Yeah.
And be like, I've been in bed all day again.
Mm-hmm.
I've done nothing. And then you feel worse. And then you're up really late. And then you sleep in again, you know, and you just use everything you're doing is contributing towards like not making you feel better. And like, not moving around, all the stuff that I understand now that like actually exercise makes me feel better, but I'm in this room, I'm, you know, in my head, I'm just watching a screen, all this stuff that's just wasn't basically taking care of myself. And then it was allowing the idea that everyone's having the best time of their goddamn lives except for you, what's wrong with you? So that I remember feeling like, I don't know what this is, and I don't think it was depression, mm-hmm. but it was like not feeling great and being aware of my mental health, definitely. And then just like, it was also in the tail end of like, you know, when you're with someone when you're like 18, you think this is the love of all ages and you'll be together forever, and then breaking up to go to uni and then sort of still being together really, mm-hmm. but then not, and all that was like an utter head fuck for me basically. Yeah. And I was sort of all over the place and very erratic and very rational. Like, anyone who would have met me there like will absolutely think I'm a piece of shit, and that's fine, because I was. And like, you look back at yourself and you don't really recognize yourself.
Yeah.
I was just like a kid who's utterly overwhelmed and also managing my own finances. Like, you know, I'd always worked, but I didn't pay rent at home, and I was on like, I was working 70 hour weeks as a chef, which sure, I was getting 200 quid, which is appalling, but when you don't really have overheads, mm-hmm. and petrol's cheap, I was living a great life. And then I go to uni and I'm paying for myself, my parents aren't doing it, I'm paying for everything. Like, it's a huge thing to take on. And yeah, so that's when I really remember being like, oh, I think how I feel in my brain is affecting how I feel about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Also, that thing of not knowing yourself enough to cut people out of your life who aren't good for you.
Yeah, I think that's such an important lesson to learn. And it comes so late in life. I think it's, for me, I learned that just about after I turned 30.
Mm.
It's like, you can cut toxic people out of your life. That is absolutely fine. If they are not bringing, if they're not making your life better, then why are you hanging around with them?
Yeah, and also I've been that person that people have cut out as well.
Yeah,
because there's parts of me that like brings out the worst in them, or there's just me that they're like, not my vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely fine, and I recognize that now, although it feels quite brutal at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever you got to do to make you feel all right. And yes, you're so right about 30 for me, and I still find it hard now. I've recognized that I've got into patterns with people where I'm like, this is not equal, and this isn't the one that makes me feel good about myself, but I'm in it now. And you know, you're like, don't want the drama sometimes of leaving it, but you're in it. But yeah, I've got better at managing that kind of stuff, because also you just, it's always the things that like you don't, the people you don't want to see and the things you don't want to do, you end up spending more time on. And then you're like, those gorgeous people that make you feel good about yourself, you're like, oh, they'll slide down the list because they'll always be there.
Yeah, they're safe there, they'll always be there.
Exactly. And that's those people that you should really like nourish yourself with.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
So yeah, I had sort of an understanding about mental health, and I think it's just everything was all over the shop, and like hormone wise was all over the shop. So that was the first sort of inkling of it, and then went and changed my course, and then I went back to Liverpool because I really loved the city. I thought it was really cool. But I moved to Salford Uni, went and did that like performance course, immediately clicked with people. Met someone in the halls who was on a performance course as well, but in a different uni. Still one of my dearest best friends today. Like, just clicked and everything started to turn around a bit more. But it was a case of like really stepping back from people who weren't doing me much good. And also that I was being really harmful towards, and they were rightly trying to extract themselves. I honestly thought that I was like, mental health doesn't really affect me. Do you know what I mean? Of that thing of being like, thinking I'd intellectualize my way out of as something that you can't control. And then it all absolutely hit me at 30, various circumstances, one of which was like a very unhealthy relationship. And I was just having these things, I didn't know what was going on. So I was like, just feel like I was dying sometimes. And it was panic attacks. I just didn't know what they were because I never had them. And just things like self-harm. I'd never done it before, so I was like doesn't everyone pull chunks of their hair out when they get stressed and just hyperventilate, and you know, doesn't everyone do this stuff? That's what life is, isn't it? But you know, I'd managed to sort of gone, yeah, that's totally normal, that's part of being in a relationship. And of course it's not, like, of course it's not. That's extreme coping mechanisms when your brain is hurting and your body is being like trying to manage everything that's going on. And even when I kind of knew it was happening, I was like, no, it can't happen to me. And also, I don't have the time for this.
Yeah,
like being like, no, my work is everything. I can't do anything that affects my work. I was doing the show about being gaslit, so I was previewing it, and I was in Sheffield at a preview, so I'm about to go on stage. Always wear like mad shit when I'm on stage, always full face of makeup. It's how I love it, because I don't get to go out anymore. I never did from doing like comedy from 23, so I was like, it's a night out, girls. But just for me. So like, it's part of the fun for me is like dressing up. So part of the thing of when I started to speak out about this relationship is part of their coping mechanism was kind of publicly go, they're a liar and they're mad, which is what was happening privately. And now it's happening publicly. And every time it would just send me into this, because you believe what is written about you is the first thing, that when it's been, you've had a long time being conditioned to believe that you're insane. And this, they had heard just like that week, I think, that I was doing a show about gaslighting. And then there was this huge, huge diatribe about me that I saw as I was about to go on stage. And I pulled up at the venue and I had this enormous hysterical panic attack, and I was just being like, I couldn't get out of the car. And so bad, so unwell, and like I never felt like that before, and nothing has ever happened where I felt like I couldn't go on stage. Mm-hmm. Like I've literally, because she's the most insensitive woman in the world, my mum texted me to go, I've got cancer again, as I was about to go and record something, and I was like, right, I'm just gonna have to deal with that, and then went and did like a panel show, and then also text me, your nana's dead, like as I was just like getting off stage for something, and then had to do another gig afterwards. Like classic my mum to just deliver this stuff by text. Oh yeah, another one, your auntie's dead, do you need any of those things that hang over doors to keep your shoe it's in? I was like, it's not really the same text kind of thing, is it? So yeah, I had this like, just read this thing and was like, oh god, I can't move, let alone go on stage. And the promoter was like, came and like gave me a glass of water, and then was like, oh, but they are expecting two acts. And I was like, okay. As in like, I was kind of being like, well, look at me, like. And they were like, oh no, they are sort of expecting two previews. So basically it was like, you know, and was like, this isn't you, you know, you're tough, and like, so I tear stained in dog hair covered jeans and a jumper went up on stage and just did like half an hour of gear so I would be allowed to leave.
Yeah.
But like actually having no real empathy or sympathy. Like if I'd seen someone like that, I'd be like, I'm gonna get someone to come and get you, or like, let's get you some food, let's get you this, like, you know, just like, but just being like, oh well, they have booked for two acts. I'm like, come on, mate. I'm in absolute pieces. It was horrific. And it wasn't like I got on stage and everything was fine. It was fucking shit.
Yeah.
It was horrible. And I felt like I couldn't make eye contact with anyone in the audience because I thought that human connection would immediately make me burst into tears, and I'm trying to have some ownership over what is being done to my life, and it's all evaporating in front of me. And then I'm like, another thing about being from Wales is just like, there was no, the first time I've been on stage and there's been no solace in it. It was horrible, and I just like, I don't think I've done anything for that. They're not a bad guy, but they have turned out to be one of the bad guys. But just that thing of being like, come on, like, we should be better at recognizing, especially if they're going, I really don't think I can do this, they're being like, pep talk is not gonna fix it. Like, we have to trust that people know themselves and know their own health and their capabilities.
For all that, like, comedians I think talk very openly and brilliantly about mental health, I don't think art industry cares. The individuals within it do, but those wider power structures. I once had a conversation with somebody who thought I knew and trusted very well, and I said, I was like, finding things a bit difficult, and I was like, I'm looking at my diary and I'm a bit overwhelmed by the amount of work and gigs I have to do and the amount of traveling when I'm feeling like this. And he went, well, you can't pull gigs because people will think you're unreliable. And then so that, and I was in the worst possible place to hear that, because then I was like, oh my god, so I can't pull them, because if I pull them I'm unreliable and then I won't get any more, and then that's my career over before it's even started, so I have to go and do this. And I was traveling all over, feel like literally crying on the train, crying on the walk there. Have you ever seen, this is very niche reference, the Katy Perry documentary?
Yeah.
Where she's
on the bed and then they just like push her on stage.
She goes up on, Russell's just like left her or cheated on her or whatever, and it's as she's going up the lift to go on stage, just this smile comes on, and I just felt like that constantly. I'd literally be crying before I went on, and then having to be like, so Willie's are funny. And I just thought,
and they are funny, to be fair.
It's great material.
God, just a little bit from an industry that is so, probably talks so openly about mental health, just those people, some of the people in positions of power do not do enough to look after people.
No, not at all. And I think because money was an overhanging thing in our household, it's like, you don't turn down work if you're being offered it. You know, and then also the freelance thing of, what if they don't ask again? So you have that constantly hanging over you. So unless I am out to the country or doing something else, I will say yes to something. I've agreed to do gigs where my agents phone me and want, you're on a plane when you've said you can do this. Like, you're in a different time zone, don't agree to do everything. But I'm like, but I want to do it as well, like, because you love your job. Because I was also like, don't be unreliable. I've like never pulled a gig. I wouldn't have done it before, where I had like everyone else at this wedding, I think, got the norovirus. I had it as well. I was drinking Pepto-Bismol on stage, and I had two pairs of the same trousers, and I brought a spare pair with me because I was like, I'm going to shit myself.
Yeah.
But I was like, I can't pull the gig. So what I've got much better at now is saying and speaking up, rather than getting to the point where I'm exhausted and sobbing, which is the first stage of not being well. Like, exhaustion will bring it on faster than anything, and just all the stuff that comes with them. I feel like since I've had like my mental health pretty shattered from stuff that happened to me, I feel like I'm a pot that's, you know, got cracks in, and if there's too much water in it, like, it will seep out.
Yeah.
So that's why I see it as, like, you've got to be smart about those things. The cracks will always be there, but I've just got to get better at managing it. If I'm exhausted, all these things will come back. I'll get far more paranoid about the way I look and more controlling about, like, more down on the way that I look, which I, day to day, I'm just like, this is it, this is fine, right? But I'm like, I'm too fat, I'm too this, I'm like, you start playing in my head. I'll be like, I'm worthless, I don't know why my partner is with me, I'm a letdown, he's so brilliant, what have I done, I'm wasting his time, all this stuff, I'm a bad friend, I'm a bad sister, I'm a bad daughter, all this stuff will just come tumbling down on you. And it's because you've got no coping mechanisms, because you're like, my parents always, since I was a young like kid, as soon as I could work at 14, they were always like, you're burning the candle at both ends, you're burning the candle at both ends. But they're right. It's like, you can't run on nothing. Oh, like, something's got to give. And usually it's like, actually, first it's my temperament. I'll get really, I'll be quite shitty with people. And then it's like exhaustion. And now I've got much better at as when I start feeling, when I get a bit mopey and start moaning about my work, and my partner's like, we get to do this, we don't have to do this. And reminds me of that, because I know I'm lucky. I will call my agent and be like, we need to take stuff out of the diary. But it's brutal. And then she'll go through it and she'll be like, what about this? And I'm like, oh, no, I really want to do that. And then she's like, okay, well, there's nothing we can take out if you're going to be like that. So we have to take something out. So what is it going to be? But it's really hard.
Oh, totally.
Is that, like, mental health conditions are inherently selfish anyway, because you are always thinking about yourself and so constantly almost obsessed with everything that's going on with you, that to do anything that could be slightly perceived as selfish outside in that, in the real world, is just an absolute no, because you don't want to put any more pressure on anyone else, because you already feel the pressure you're putting on yourself. It just feels like you're adding more to them. But actually, they don't probably
feel like such a letdown of a human that you're like, but then if I cancel stuff, I'm letting down other people, and oh, see, I am a letdown. It's just a never ending cycle.
And it's actually it's actually okay to be selfish and look after yourself and go, do you know what, I've burnt out so many times, and it's one of those great lessons, like, right, I did it this time, I'm never doing it again, and then a couple of weeks later, like, oh, fuck's sake. But you do, you kind of, like, you just work and work, and you get to this point, and you just can't do anymore, and you do have to just kind of put your hand up and say, right, okay, I fucked up, I'm not doing very well, I can't do these things. And, yeah, no one's going to hold it against you. The person that's going to make you feel the worst about it is you.
Also, like, looking at it in a, like, really sort of trying to step back from it, it is much better to not do a job because you're not well enough than to do a fucking shit job. That will get around quicker than you being unreliable. Like, do you know what I mean? Agents are clever. It's their job to make up excuses about why you can't do shit that you don't want to do or can't do. So, like, it's on you. Like, that's their job. Like, I know, I appreciate not everyone has an agent who's listening to, like, if you work in Tesco, get an agent. They can call in sick for you. But, you know, like, it is that thing of, we have to let ourselves off. And I think it also comes with this, like, I'm trying to, this year, one of my New Year's resolutions is to not fetishize hard work. Not to be like, I haven't slept, I'm doing this, like, which I do, because I'm like, it's a kind of a way of being proud of myself. And also to justify the fact I feel so guilty about doing comedy, and it's basically, you know, a frivolous thing to do. So I'm like, yeah, but I'm working hard at being frivolous. I don't have any time off of being frivolous. But, like, this capitalist idea that we're only worth what we're working and making and contributing towards, you know, the system or whatever, is really unhelpful. Because also, the flip side of it is, you make anyone who's not able to, or, you know, working, feel like shit. And also, if I did less work, there'd be more to go around. Like, stop doing two people's workload, Kiri. Like, you can relax a bit.
And it's as well, like, when people sort of, like, weaponize it. So I remember, like, say when I used to work in the bar, and I'd be like, oh, I'm so tired, I've done, like, this is my, like, third shift this week, and someone would be like, three shifts? Oh, you're tired after three? Well, I've worked six. And it's like, it's not a competition. Like, okay, you feel exhausted after six, I feel exhausted after three, but we're all doing different things with our personal life as well. And it was like this comment that you weren't allowed to be tired if you hadn't worked as much as somebody else. And it was like, okay, sorry. Didn't realise there was a rule.
Well, there is. And then when you get to 30, people are like, try having kids.
That's
you signed up to it, fucker.
Exactly.
Do you want to play some anxiety bingo?
Yes. So this is anxiety, like an anxiety bingo, where we give you two sides of the same anxious coin, and it's which situation would you rather be in. Oh, I like this one. I'll do this one. Would you rather always be late to meet or always be the one left waiting?
I'm always late to meet, as today will attest, but I would much rather be early. But, like, because I have an attention deficit disorder as well, so by its nature, is you agree to things that are physically impossible. You're like, you know, I've had meetings within meetings, like my partner sometimes will be like, I've seen that day on the diary.
Yeah.
It's like impossible. Like you've given yourself 3 minutes to get to the other side of London. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be late, and then it makes you late and then late and then late. So I would much rather be the person who sat there on their phone being like, it's all right, I'll wait, mm-hmm. than what I am, which is constantly late for everything. And I said to him, this happened last week. I had a day where it was like 4 meetings and I'd given myself like no time to actually manage it. I said, oh, I've got a real attention deficit day at the end of the month. And he's like, well, take something out. And I was like, I can't. Mm-hmm. Not just because I feel like I can't, but also because like, otherwise I'm going to have to be in London another day. I don't live here and I don't like being here. It is not good for my mental health. Mm-hmm. So like, if I get, Lauren's like, mm-hmm, yeah. So I was like, if I have to be here another day, that is worse to me than having a very stressful day. And then as soon as I'm like, you know, like on my way to the first thing, I'm like, oh, fuck this. What am I doing? Like, yeah. But you just got to like, I made this bed and be very apologetic. And yeah, God, so stupid.
I'm a late person. I think people think it's like a negative thing about you, which I suppose in a little way it is. But also, as someone who's dead anxious, if I'm the one left waiting and I'm like, oh my God, they're not going to turn up. Oh my God, I've got the wrong... The amount of times I will, on a like very rare occasion, be early and I'll be like, well, I'm in the wrong place because they're not here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. And then I'll be like checking the phone, being like, well, they said this address. Yep, I'm at this address. Have I got the right time? I've got the right time. So if I'm late, then I know the other person is probably already going to be there. So when I get there, I'd rather just do the whole apology of, oh, I'm so sorry. It was the tube. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't, Lauren. You sat by the front door, not sure exactly when to leave. But yeah, just that thought of being left waiting. I was 45 minutes late for my first date with Matt.
Oh my
45
God.
45 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was that anxious because I'd not really done dating before either. That was like, oh, what if I get there and he's not there? Oh my God, what if I get there and I can't fight? At least if I know for definite he... In fact, I could have just been 10 minutes late. That would have been politer. But I got myself so worked up that I was going to be left waiting and feeling like a mug that I was like, well, he'll definitely be there now.
And if he stayed, he's really keen.
Exactly. Yep. What a keeper. I'm so sorry, Matt. But I'm starting at the high point of waiting 45 minutes. Everything's uphill from there.
Would you like to ask our last question?
Yeah. If you could go back to your younger self and give yourself some advice on mental health or living without misery, what would you tell yourself?
Ooh, interesting. I think I would explain to myself that mental health everyone lives with, mm-hmm. at some point. Mm-hmm. So just be a bit more self-aware in terms of that and look after yourself. I know that sounds like self-care is a term that just gets thrown around so much, but it is so important and it shouldn't be seen as an indulgence. It should be like, you know, we're never like, I can't believe my car wants oil. And we, you know, like, and don't like food is fuel. And like, we have to look after ourselves. Like if you had a pet, you would never be like, get back on that wheel, hamster. You'd be like, oh, get it. It needs to sleep. Or just sort of like, you know, lie there for a bit or look at things. Like that is part of being a happy functioning organism. Not that I'm like, hamsters are the absolute peak of happiness sat there in the corner of a classroom in a cage. But you know, just that thing that like, it's all right to look after yourself, which, do you know what, again, is such a privileged thing because often the things to look after yourself involve finance. Mm. And if you don't have access to those things, so like now I'm lucky enough that I've done stuff where I can be like, I can afford to take time off. Prior to the last probably like 2 years, that has not been an option. And because I've been the breadwinner and to the point, you know, we're underwriting things that are going on around you. And it's, you know, so I'm just really aware of being like, if I was me growing up, would this actually apply? Mm-hmm. But I guess it can be like cheap things. Like, you know, I calm down if I'm in the countryside or even if I'm in a park. I'm a lot calmer if I'm around countryside. So it's recognising the things that are good for you and doing more of them and the people who are good for you. Fuck off the cunts. Basically. Let's get out on a tea-towel.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to end it. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
That is all from us for another episode of Conversations Against Living Miserably. I hope you enjoyed that, and I hope you didn't just hear my tummy rumbling there. Because to be honest, I feel like I started off on a really nice roll there. I had some nice rhythm going to this outro, and I don't want to have to re-record it because you heard my rumbly tumbly. Huge thank you to Kiri for stopping by and chatting with us. Now, if you want to catch Kiri performing, see some of her comedy, her latest show, Victim Complex, which was her 2019 Edinburgh Fringe show. I saw it afterwards on tour and was absolutely blown away. It's phenomenal. She has recorded that and it's available for you to buy right now. You can get that online from www.gumroad.com. That's the name of the website. So if you go there and type Kiri's name into the search bar, up she'll pop. You can buy that and watch it from home. Plus 20% of the money is going to Welsh Women's Aid. So you can sit back and enjoy some fab comedy while donating to a very worthy cause. Lots of love as always to Aaron and the team at Dave and Calm, which, speaking of worthy causes, you've already helped Calm, probably without realising, as the ad money from this goes to Calm, so just by listening you've helped out. But of course, if you have a few quid spare, Calm are always so grateful and appreciative for any donations so that they can continue doing the invaluable work that they do. Thanks so much for joining us, really appreciate it. If you want to help us out by doing all the usual podcast things, like, share, subscribe, rate, review, we're very grateful for that as well, and we hope to catch you again soon. Look after yourselves. Bye. Bye, 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 bye. Bye, bye, bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? What is...
I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.